The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
Well, this is exciting. I can't believe where I am. If I say the words British and library, you probably imagine a lot of books. Well, there are a lot of books here at the British Library, but there are also an enormous number of tapes, recordings of all sorts of things, commercial radio, BBC radio, non-radio. And the curator of the radio collection here at the British Library is Paul Wilson. And I've come to see Paul to find out basically what you're up to, because you've got a new scheme going, or at least you're going to try and launch a new scheme, aren't you, to try and record more.
We are. Effectively, the British Library is the UK's national radio collection. But it was really designed for an earlier age, for the analogue era, when we only had a handful of radio stations, the BBC essentially. And of course, we're now in a very different era of digital radio, getting on for 700 radio stations, licensed radio stations in the UK today. And the vast majority of it, about 97% of it, in fact, is not being archived by anyone at all. So that is really the big challenge for the British Library now. Not necessarily to capture everything, although that is certainly one option which is open to us. It's perfectly feasible nowadays to capture all 700 streams and save it. And actually, it would be a relatively economical thing to do. But at the very least, to create a representative record of radio broadcasting as it exists today and as it existed in the past, going back as far as we can, effectively.
Because people do know, I think, that the BBC has a good sound archive. Some would say it's not perfect, but it's good. Commercial radio, though, if you want to find old commercial radio, there's not a lot of it about. I think you may have more than most of us think you do.
It's a good point. The library has some important collections of commercial radio. For example, we've got the entire Capital Radio analogue tape archive, as it was until the early 1990s. And we've also got an important collection of LBC and IRN News, for example. But the vast majority of the UK's commercial radio output is not available for research. And actually, this we need to make an important distinction here, because commercial radio stations, of course, like all radio stations today, are required by the terms of their Ofcom licence to keep what they call compliance recordings. But they're not required to keep them for longer than about 42 days. And the reality is that after that 42 days, the vast majority of that content is lost. Now, of course, radio stations, especially the big commercial players, do have systems for holding temporarily selected output for purposes of reuse or syndication or whatever. But those are not archives, as we would term it here at the British Library. An archive is a repository which is designed and managed for the long term and for the benefit of future generations of users and researchers, and of course for researchers today. There's no guarantee that those big commercial radio archives will still exist even 5 years from now. And of course, as you know, Trevor, a lot of the stations, we're in an era of takeovers. Radio stations are coming and going all the time, especially the community radio stations. What happens when a radio station goes off air, when it's bought out by another company? What happens when a media manager at a radio station retires or moves on to another job and perhaps takes the login credentials for
garages full of tapes from their old radio stations,
exactly.
Haven't they?
And the reason those analog collections survive is actually quite difficult to lose a shelf or a box full of tapes. But of course, if you've got potentially thousands or tens of thousands of hours of audio on a hard drive, even if it's a hard drive array system, which is of course backed up, there's still no guarantee that anyone will be able to access or research that content 5, 10, 20 years from now. And that's what a national library, of course, has to consider.
Because you're interested, I'm assuming, in making available recordings for people to hear because they're doing research. So they might be writing, but presumably you've also got material that people could actually use in the compilation of a radio documentary, a history programme of some sort.
That's true. Traditionally, the library has served primarily the research community. Nowadays, we have a much more diverse set of users, and they use our content for all kinds of things. And in terms of the radio collections here, they are used quite regularly by producers who are seeking content to use in new programmes.
Can you give me an example of that recently? Can you give me an example of a programme where somebody's come to you and said, have you got anything that would fit my brief, and you've been able to say, actually, yes, we've got an hour of that, or we've got a show about this?
Yes, we've just recently, of course, celebrated the 50th anniversary of pirate radio, and we've had producers here who've been seeking pirate radio recordings to use in features, historical retrospectives on the pirate stations, the early days of Radio Caroline and so forth. And the British Library is one of the few places where you could find such a collection of historical pirate radio recordings going back to the early 60s.
Now, you and I worked together a couple of years ago, didn't we, on a BBC project called the Listener's Archive, and we were asking people to scour their own lofts and garages and look for old tapes. I think there'll be people listening to this who've been in the business for years, who've got, as we said before, you know, old spools stuck somewhere. I think there's always a slight feeling of, well, I don't want to die and have them put in a skip. On the other hand, would the British Library welcome me turning up with a box of old tapes marked, you know, Radio Trent or whoever it is?
We certainly don't welcome people turning up on site with boxes of tapes, because the library has to, first of all, establish that these recordings are required for the national collection. We can't keep on duplicating content unnecessarily. But we are trying to create a more complete historical record. So yes, we are looking out for historical radio recordings which are not already in the major archives. I'm thinking particularly of the BBC Sound Archive and the British Library Sound Archive. We definitely want to know about the recordings that you have. We won't necessarily take them, as I say, if we find that we've already got them, or if they're very poor quality recordings, we may not want them. But please do let us know what you have, because much has been lost. And of course, we're acutely aware of the fact that even today, important material is sitting around in people's cupboards and attics, which is of enormous historical importance. I'll give you an example, actually. About 3 years ago, we were contacted by someone whose brother-in-law was the husband of the wife of the late band leader, Carol Gibbons, who, of course, was a key figure from the very early days of British radio. He was an American band leader who the BBC brought over to lead the Savoy Orpheans, and who were regularly broadcasting from the Savoy. And he was basically a fixture on British radio, not just the BBC, but also the commercial radio stations from that point onwards until his death in 1952. And he had amassed a really important and fascinating collection of actually early commercial radio, Radio Luxembourg, Radio Lyon, Radio Athlone, an Irish station from the 1930s. So that was a real treasure trove which was sitting in cardboard boxes somewhere on the Bayswater Road, and it would have been thrown out if we hadn't been able to intervene and rescue it. So that collection, actually, we're hoping will form the basis of one of three radio collections of selected material which the library is hoping to put online. Pre-war radio, a collection of World War II era radio, and some post-war radio, so that students and researchers can not only get an authentic idea of what it was listening to the radio in those three eras, but also, of course, compare them and see how radio changed very dramatically from the pre-war era into the post-war era.
More recently, I remember you telling me that somebody had donated you all the old live sessions from GLR, which were going to be thrown out when the station turned into BBC London. And I think some people have got these collections at home. They think, do you know what, I'm not sure I own these. I'm not sure whether I should hand them over. But of course, you're not giving anybody the BBC or commercial radio copyright away, are you? If you say, look, I've got these recordings, Paul, would you like to listen to them?
No, the rights issues are a completely separate kettle of fish, really. Obviously, the library's concerned about copyright, but in terms of depositing material with the British Library, it's not a critical factor. It becomes more important when we, for example, want to put something online or to publish it in some form. The British Library's collections primarily exist for the purposes of research and study. The important thing really is that we get a chance to examine it and to preserve it, especially if it's on a fragile carrier. We can look at the ownership and rights issues retrospectively.
So I guess you must have a real problem. We know that even CDs are deteriorating. You must have things on DAT, you must have old shellac discs. I mean, just keeping the material safe and available must be a bit of a challenge.
It is, actually. And of course, we do have recordings on pretty much every format that's ever been used since the earliest days of recorded sound. In terms of radio, I don't think we have anything on wax cylinders, but most of the early radio recordings before tape came along were made onto nitrate lacquer discs, and they're very fragile over time, especially if the discs are not stored in good conditions. The lacquer starts to shrink away from the aluminium core, and of course once that's happened, once the lacquer has fallen off the core, then you've lost the recording.
So do you try and digitise these?
We do. We have to get to them fairly quickly though, and of course these discs were never intended to last this long, so what we're finding increasingly is that the acetate recordings that are coming in here are already pretty much on their last legs. So for any listeners, if you do have nitrate lacquer discs in your attics or cupboards, please do get in touch with us, because those recordings are more likely to be unique, and they are more likely to be lost if they are not transferred and digitally preserved very soon.
So let's go back, Paul, and we'll do all the contact details in a minute. But where we came in, which is this new idea about trying to record everything, is this something that you've got to clear with all the radio stations, and is there a sort of bureaucratic element to all this, or can you just start doing it?
Actually, the British Library's got a special dispensation as a legal deposit library, permitting us to record UK radio or its simulcast online streams without radio industry permission, although of course we would like to have the radio industry's consent for it, because we're pretty sure that this will be an invaluable resource, not just for researchers and educators, but also for the radio industry itself. And to give you an example, the recent Action Stations report on the commercial radio industry has valued the output of commercial radio alone in the UK at about £1.5 billion. Currently, that investment, that creative and radio industry investment, is largely being lost. It's unavailable for reuse. So this is another aspect of the National Radio Archive, which the British Library would like to set up. We want it to be not just a tool for researchers and students, but also for the radio and creative industries, and of course for the general public.
So if people want to get in touch with you, if they think they've got something that you ought to know about, do they email you?
Yes, please. They can contact me at radio@bl.uk.
Thank you very much indeed, Paul Wilson. You've been great. And I'm going to have a look round at some more of these tapes before I go, whether you like it or not. This is the Radio Today programme. We'll have some news now from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Ofcom has started a consultation process which could end up in less regulation surrounding music descriptions in formats. The regulator is asking for input about the future shape of radio stations' formats for AM and FM local and regional stations. UTV stations are looking for the next big thing. The company is giving away a recording deal worth £100,000 across its network of local stations in England and Wales. And over half of new cars now have DAB installed as standard. The figure as of March 2014 stood at 55%. That's the latest from RadioToday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Thank you, Roy. Some radio moments now with David Lloyd.
It's exactly 30 years this week since the launch of the last influential offshore pirate station.
From the MV Communicator in international waters, we are Laser 558. Owned by Urad SA, this is free radio with non-stop hit music practicing good programming and technical standards.
So, in a world where commercial radio was still all things to all people with public service requirements and little music flow, Laser saw an opportunity. It lasted just over a year, but its audience quickly rose to a reported 4 million.
Good morning. I'm Rick Harris, and on behalf of David Lee Stone, Jesse Brandon, Steve Masters, Joe Young, Tim Levenseller, Bill Voigt, Dennis Legere, David London, I'm pleased to introduce you to All Europe Radio, Laser 558. We promise to bring you at least 54 minutes of international hit songs each hour we broadcast. All hits, all the time.
Laser coming on air this week in 1984 and the true beginnings of the segue in British music radio. 1950 now, and this week that year, the pilot series of a new soap opera. It emerged from an idea from a Lincolnshire farmer, as Godfrey Baisley recalls.
What he had in mind, of course, was that the dangers and the risks in farming were just as great as the cliffhangers of Dick Barton, and he was a great grower of black currants and seeds and herbage seeds, and he knew that the whole of his living could go in a thunderstorm what you will. Well, that's fine, that was excitement, but it wasn't a daily serial. So I got back to this, and I discussed the matter once or twice with Ted Mason, who was then writing Dick Barton, and we formulated this farming family with two neighbours.
Godfrey Baisley, the first producer of The Archers. The pilot series began this week 54 years ago and then started across the UK just a few months later. From The Archers on the Home Service to Dan Dare on Radio Luxembourg, the last edition of Dan Dare was heard this week in 1956. Dan Dare, two words spoken fondly by a generation weaned on radio drama. Dan was a science fiction hero who appeared in the Eagle comic from 1950 and heard on radio for 5 years. The stories were set far, far away into the future. Yes, the late 1990s. And we heard just a snippet there of the theme because the programmes were recorded on wax discs and accordingly they've long since disappeared. This week, 2 years ago, saw a farewell to Ron Onions. Ron is remembered for his work in commercial radio news. He set up the Capital Newsroom in 73 before being tempted down the road to troubled LBC.
There I was, quite enjoying myself for the first 6 months, snapping my fingers and grooving away to hot chocolate or whatever it was. And then the situation here at LBC was not good, and moves were made. And it was indicated to me that an approach would be made to me to come to this station. No, I said, not that. I mean, straightening up some of the early problems that seemed horrendous at the time. There's a kind of folklore around the place about reading the news and the door opening and incoming the cleaner with a vacuum cleaner.
A hunt is on for those responsible for a terror bombing in London, which has killed one man and injured 20 other people, two of them children.
Tales of the reign of Ron Onions, who's credited now with creating the sort of agile newsroom which was then unfamiliar in British radio. He died this week in 2012. Ron went on also to become the first programme controller of London's Jazz FM. And it was this week, 9 years ago, that station closed after 15 years, ready to become Smooth.
Every time we say goodbye.
Broadcasting is a sector known for more than its fair share of government reports. And this week, 28 years ago, the Peacock Committee reported on BBC financing. It suggested the retention of the licence fee and the privatisation of Radio 1 and Radio 2. This week, 29 years ago, we lost the creator of the longest-running factual programme on radio.
I know quite a lot about desert islands, and I know that they are not places to go to. Mm. There was a time when the BBC suggested I should go on a desert island and give a talk about how I was getting on each day. That I'm not looking for that sort of trouble.
Roy Plumley, the creator and first host of Desert Island Discs, who died this week in 1985. International broadcasts are now commonplace, but it's only 36 years since the first live relay from Russia to Britain. The program was heard on Radio 1.
And it's via satellite now to Moscow, USSR we go, to join Andy Peebles, who's at the Rossiya Hall in Moscow. And Andy, you've arrived. What time is it right there now?
The time here now, kids, is exactly 7:30, and I'm talking to you, as you so rightly say, from the Rossiya Hall here in Moscow.
Maybe you could set the scene for us.
Well, yes, I'll do that for you. Elton John tonight plays his second of four concerts in Moscow.
Radio 1, live from Russia for the first time ever this week in 1979. So, with Foxy presenting his last Hit 40 UK 10 years ago, Virgin being sold to the Times of India 6 years ago, and Tony Blackburn leaving the BBC for Capital this week 26 years ago...
Right here at Capital Gold this morning.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. Thank you, as ever, David Lloyd. Thank you, Roy, for the news. Thank you, Paul Wilson, curator of radio here at the British Library, for having us here today. He is radio at bl.uk if you've got anything that you think might be interesting. This has been the Radio Today programme, a TDC production as ever. We'll have something equally interesting next time. Thanks for listening.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.